We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 301. We made it to the other side, Scott. What's up?
Yeah, other side of 300. Now it's all smooth sailing, right? We have a beautiful season in front of us. Sunday morning, ready to go. Pitchers and catchers, grown-ass men throwing baseballs to each other.
Oh, we got a lot of that this week.
What could be better? What could be better?
Happy spring training. Happy long weekend.
Yeah, I forgot. See, when you work from home, long weekends almost don't exist. They everybody's like, yeah, holiday on Monday. I'm like, oh, okay. I have no idea. I go down the hall to my office, and there was no memo saying that Monday was a holiday. So I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, I work from home occasionally, and I think I would struggle with the Monday through Friday working from home because there's no separation.
No, there's none. I mean, I people think that it's like you work less because you're at home, and it's such a good thing. In fact, I probably work double because I'm in here so often that, you know, at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock, if I have an hour or two that, you know, I could watch TV or do some work, I usually will go up to the office to do some work. So it happens. You immerse yourself in a lot of the things that you're doing. And you're right. It's a fuzzy separation.
Yeah, the commute was, I had this conversation with somebody and like, what is the ideal commute? And I think it's like 20 minutes. 20 minutes is just enough to have a separation from home and work, but not enough to make you want to kill yourself as you're either sitting in traffic or sitting on the subway.
Yeah, no, I mean, I look at people when they look at me and say, oh man, I die for working at home. Sometimes I'm like, man, I would love a little bit of a commute where I could just hang out, listen to a podcast or, you know, collect my thoughts and wind down from the day and then talk to, you know, other people during the day. And I know people don't like, you know, they'll get sick of other people in their office. But when you're talking to your dog and your, people on the, when I'm talking to you and the dog and a couple other people through the phone,
whoa.
Sometimes you want some interaction.
Well, pretty soon Kemp will start talking back.
Yeah. It's going to be, I'll be learning my ABCs and my numbers and, you know, eventually all the elementary school education stuff. So I'll be brushing up on all the knowledge.
So I can tell how your weekend's been going. My weekend has been quite interesting. Yesterday, did some nice engagement photos in Central Park. So you can imagine how that went.
So tell me about that. I would like to know
honestly,
how that
wasn't,
went.
It wasn't that bad. I mean, it's on the surface, it sounds terrible, I'm sure. We wanted to just get a few photos for like the wedding website and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But we didn't want to do like an extended photo shoot because I don't know if you've noticed, I'm sure you have, those things are friggin' expensive. Even for like an engagement shoot. So we just did a half hour little quick session. Some freelance photographer, we found her online and she showed up in the park and just took our pictures. But it's the most awkward thing when you're posing and trying. None of the stuff that she had us do is natural. Like walk down the path, holding each other's hands, gazing into each other's eyes. Like no one in their right mind does that. You would be committed for doing that if you walked around like that everyday life.
Yeah, no, it's awkward. It definitely is awkward. We did one that was pretty short as well. And it's just an uncomfortable thing, but you just got to put your head down and do it and smile and then you're finished. So, you know, all these things, there are boxes that you have to check as the other person getting married. And this is one of them.
Yeah. We went out drinking afterwards. So.
There you go. See, that's a nice concession.
Nice little Saturday.
Yeah, nice little Saturday.
So why don't you tell people quickly, just remind people about the events. We'll plow through those fast because we've got quite a bit to touch on this episode.
Yep, sure. The spring training event, obviously everybody knows because you already have your tickets. I'm going to be sending out those tickets, transferring all the tickets to everybody's accounts this week probably. So you should be getting that and you'll look for an email from me. So if you have not gotten anything by the end of the week, shoot me an email because that means either it went to spam or you're not getting it some reason. So, you know, shoot me an email if you have not gotten it by Friday. And then BP Crew events during the regular season, we got 5 of them coming up and everything is on the fan shop. We have one in April. April 13th is the first one. Definitely want to get your tickets for that one. And then we got the Boston series in May, Houston series in June, then July versus Colorado, and August 31st against the Oakland Athletics. So those are all a lot of fun. Make sure you go to the website, the Fan Shop, and get your tickets. And remember, we're doing the captain deal where if you captain a group of 10 or more, you get your ticket for free. If you captain a group of 5 or more, you get your ticket for half off. So rally your friends, get everybody together and join the BP crew, because it's a ton of fun. And then chapters, you're getting an email probably today from chapters from Colleen, who is going to be working with the crew and doing a lot of the back end stuff, kind of working with us in tandem and helping out. She's been a huge help so far. I'm really looking forward to getting her more involved too. She's pumped up. We're all pumped up about this. So look for an email about the chapters. If you have not emailed us about, you know, where you are in the country, what city you are in, and that you want to get involved with the chapter there, shoot us an email, info@bronxpinstripes.com, and we'll get you on the mailing list.
So I think we had something groundbreaking happen this week. We had something the Yankees did that pretty much every Yankees fan agreed was a good thing, and that was extending Severino for 4 years, $40 million with a potential option for a fifth year. I did not find one person talking shit about this deal. And you know, especially on social media, how difficult that is.
Well, yeah, because I think there's one, we all understand what happens in this arbitration process. And we saw it, you know, with what's his face from the Indians, Bauer.
Trevor Bauer. There was a couple articles written about that, how he went through character assassination. The Indians went in there and used... You know, listen, Bauer rubs people the wrong way. He's very outgoing on Twitter. He says some possibly inappropriate things, or just things you don't want maybe one of your starting pitchers to say. But they use that against him and started to attack him for things that he's doing off of the mound. I mean, he's very good on the mound, but they were attacking him for things off the mound.
Yeah, and I mean, he's definitely become a polarizing character. I think he's become actually pretty funny. I've grown an appreciation for the guy because he just doesn't give an F, which I do appreciate. So, look, I think they avoided arbitration. They basically bought out the arbitration years and then gave him, there's a team option now for free agency when he is eligible for free agency. So it's a good thing. What this does for Severino, and people are like, some people I saw, not that they're upset about it by any means, but they're like, oh, well, it's not that big of a deal. They just bought out the arbitration years. Well, there's a lot of uncertainty happening around baseball right now. And the fact that there have been contentious arbitration hearings in the past with Betances and ownership, you know, I think this is a big deal because it's saying to your guy that, hey, you know, we believe in you. We are going to give you that money. We're not going to go through this process. We're going to give you guaranteed money right now. And that's what Severino saw. Guaranteed money. $40 million guaranteed next 4 years, put it in the pocket. Mom, did you, there was a conversation.
Yeah, she said, did you win? And he said, no, I got $40 million.
No, but I got $40 million in my pocket. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's when you're looking at the guaranteed money and the fact that he's got that in his pocket right now, in his family's pocket, that's a big deal. So, you know, I'm happy for them and he's happy with it. And that's the greatest thing. The team is happy. The player is happy and the fans are happy.
Totally. And also, I mean, there's potentially, we don't know what's going to happen after the current CBA is up after 2021. But at the very least, he banks himself $26 million, even if there is a work stoppage. So that's also insurance for Severino. And it's something that I saw, I believe, Jeff Passan tweeting about, that it's interesting that in 2020 and 2021, there's higher than average salaries than you see in a lot of these kinds of extensions. But then in 2022, it's a little bit more modest of a salary. It's basically $10 million, $11 million for each of those 3 years. But if you're Severino and you're Severino's agent saying, listen, we don't know what's going to happen after 2021. Let's get some security now. I think this is a great deal for both sides because what the Yankees insured themselves here is that they're winning an arbitration every year, except I guess this year, right?
Yes, that is. Well, they also have a known quantity now, so they know what Severino is going to be against the luxury tax number. Could we just call it a cap? Because that's exactly what it's playing like, right?
Well, the Yankees
like a cap. I mean, it's playing like a cap. It's not strict, but it's playing like a cap that they have to work within. Because that's what they're doing.
But they're over the cap.
I know they're over it now, but it's still a number that they're looking at. It's essentially the same thing where it's a target that an organization is trying to hit or stay above or stay below.
Either way, soft cap.
It's a soft cap. Thank you. The fact that they know now where he is, and it's still a reasonably, you know, it's a good price, and they know where he is. It's a great price. The 2023 even, you're looking at the first year of free agency with an option of 15 million, and you look at some of the AAV, some of these guys that are come out there signing for another
look what Patrick Corbin just got.
Yes. So it's a tremendous deal. Now, I think we're seeing in baseball, across baseball, and again, with this, we don't know what's going to happen with the new CBA, but you are seeing guys trying to renegotiate, you know, with a year or two left on their contract. So this is very much could be a play for Severino if he has some good years. Hey, look, we've outplayed this contract now. Let's renegotiate. You see that all the time. So I wouldn't be surprised if he was like, let me get the guaranteed money so I know I'm having it here. If we outperform and I do really, really, really well, we could go back to the table and see if we can make a deal.
Well, he's still going to be 29 years old. Even if the Yankees pick up that option, he's only 29 years old after that.
Yeah, and that's great. I mean, so prime of your career still, prime of your, you know, maybe a year or two after if you're looking at the numbers by age, but still in a very good spot to hit free agency.
I think that what we saw with Severino, what we saw with Aaron Nola, that we're going to see more of this, especially because of the uncertainty in the free agent market. These guys are not going to risk going to free agency and not getting the money they think they're worth. They'd rather take their money earlier on. I think this might be a new trend. Buster Olney tweeted that too, that there's a sort of a run on, he equated it to a run on a bank because the players are just taking the money when it's there for them. I mean, for the teams, these owners are loving this. For Steinbrenner and Cashman to say they can get a top 10 pitcher in MLB right now for $40 million over the next 4 years, that's a friggin' steal.
No doubt about it. And that's what's beautiful for the ownership. But again, these guys getting that guaranteed money, that's what they want. They see those guaranteed dollars and... It's very attractive and hard to pass up sometimes. And I think that's, we've seen that with some of the younger guys. We also see that with like some of these contracts where they sign longer terms, like Trout signed an earlier extension to get some guaranteed money. They're dipping in the pockets early to get that money so that they can, take care of family, invest it in a smart way. And then, you know, when it's time or when they've severely outplayed a contract, they'll just worry about getting more money later because usually it's there.
David Price was asked in Red Sox spring training, because you remember David Price had an opt out after last year, mm-hmm. and he didn't do it. And they asked, why didn't you opt out? And he said, have you looked at the current free agent market?
Well, he's making a stupid amount of money too. Like right. He never would have gotten close to what he was.
But
he
in the past, we've seen guys who were still guaranteed a stupid amount of money. Sabathia opted out. He was guaranteed a stupid amount of money and he still opted out and got an extra year of stupid amounts of money.
But you're, like you said, the market conditions are very, very different. Very different where we are today. So, and David Price, you know, while we saw what he was doing last season in the playoffs, and then into this year, and he was just having a really horrible time with the playoffs and just a bad rap in Boston. Like you knew he was going to take it, and it was sticking it to the Red Sox. And then he went out and had outperformed it, and did well in the playoffs, which kind of made it feel a little bit better for them. Unfortunately. That pissed me off.
Well, he still did not pitch well against the Yankees, so I still feel like we have that sliver over David Price, is that in his one start in the playoffs against the Yankees, he got shelled.
I really thought we were going to get one of those moments where, you know, the Red Sox were able to unload all of those horrible contracts to the Dodgers, and they basically got out free. The Dodgers gave them a get out of jail free card.
Well, you're talking about with Adrian Carl Crawford,
yeah. Adrian Gonzalez, and wasn't Beckett in that deal too? There were a bunch of guys that they just unloaded onto the Dodgers.
Was he still in that?
I thought he was. Maybe I'm off on that, but I thought he was. Either way, they unloaded a ton of money and a ton of contracts, and I thought they were going to get stuck with Price. And yeah, they're still stuck with Price.
I still don't think they're gonna be happy paying Price $30 million.
No, they're. I mean, he's got a significant amount of time left on there. So,
I'm still
hoping it blows up.
Josh Beckett was one of the biggest a holes to ever walk the face of the earth.
Yeah, and he was an a hole for two teams against the Yankees.
Miami when they beat him in 2003, and then the Red Sox. Yeah, God, why'd you bring Josh Beckett up? But I also love the Severino deal because we were worried that Randy Levine was going to stick his big fat foot in his big fat face and say something stupid about our ace. And now hopefully he will keep his trap shut.
Yeah, I think everybody is going to say nice things about Severino now. And we're all going to talk beautifully about him. And there's going to be zero character assassination because now he's locked up.
I saw Sweeney tweet something. He said, over the last 25 years, the Yankees have done significant extensions prior to first crack at free agency, and they're 7 for 7. Tino, Jeter, Mariano, Pettit, Posada, Cano, and Gardner. And Severino will be the 8th. All right, so pitchers and catchers reported, and there was a few takeaways. We got all the classic pictures, right? All the cliche pictures we thought we were going to get of the grown men throwing baseballs, but the cameras being 400 feet away. I just love how these writers tweet out these videos. You can't even see if that's some trainer we've never heard of or if it's Aaron Judge throwing the ball. That's how far away they are.
Yeah, except, did you see what Hoke did? Hoke MacGyvered. I have a lot of respect for Brian Hoke. I had a lot of respect for him before I saw this. Now I have even more respect for the man. Binoculars with the cell phone to get a zoomed in picture. That's next level.
Yeah, how do you think he was planning that all off season?
I mean, that's next level stuff. You don't just come up with that. You have to plan that. That's great stuff.
Ordered some stuff on Amazon so he could be ready for spring training.
I mean just binoculars. That's beautiful. That's literally taking something that has nothing to do with your camera and using it to your advantage to get a zoomed in picture of men throwing the ball to each other.
Why wouldn't you just get a strong zoom camera?
Because it's not so, you can't connect it to social immediately. It's not the same. He's using.
They don't
what
have
he had.
Cameras now where you can immediately send like the pictures.
He's not a
to
photographer. He's not going
to
go out there and why would he have to go out and spend all that money on an insane camera when he could just get a pair of binoculars, use a cell phone, and MacGyver it.
He's got all that book money coming in.
He did a beautiful job.
He can afford it.
I think he did a beautiful job.
That's something that we would create.
And I love it. That's exactly why I have so much respect for that.
Oh, there is this gadget you could just buy that does this. But no, let's buy these other things that are unrelated and try and make it ourselves.
Well, you have binoculars because you have to see what's happening. You have a cell phone because you have to communicate with the outside world and the public who wants to know about everything. Let's combine them. Let's not bring another thing with me. And let's just make a beautiful photo that's zoomed in so I can actually see the person who's throwing the ball. I think it was genius.
You know, the guys I love are the guys that sit in the bleachers with like their tank top on and binoculars. Like the old men who just sit there. Maybe they're listening to John and Susan on the radio, yeah, and then they bust out the binoculars so they can see in. Like, oh, that pitch was an inch outside. This ump doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, those guys are also next level, trying to see what's going on, paying for that cheap ticket, but getting a great view.
Some other takeaways just from like the first couple days that guys were reporting. You see Bird didn't sign that guy's dog. I mean, least surprising news out of camp so far.
I don't know what to do here. And then it just didn't sign it, man. Come on, sign the damn dog.
Nah, he's a cat guy.
Sign the dog.
Severino trimmed down, said he lost 10 to 15 pounds, and he hopes that will keep him fresh throughout the season. He said fatigue was one of the biggest issues he credited. Fatigue being one of the reasons why he struggled in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, this was something that we kind of called out, the fact that when you get fatigued, your mechanics break down and you can't repeat that same delivery over and over and over again, and your motion becomes, you know, slightly different. And if you have a slight hitch or a little bit of an irregularity in the way that you're throwing the ball, then yeah, you're gonna be sloppier and you're not gonna hit your spots and then your confidence goes down. And I think a lot of that just was a trickle down effect. And you know, this was something that we read about. I forget who it was who interviewed Rothschild, but he was also talking about the comparison to when Verlander was in his second or third year and had that really bad middle part of the season. And it was a very similar, like the timing was almost identical to when Severino started breaking down. So I feel like you see these guys are not only learning the game, but they're learning their bodies and their best way to condition themselves through an entire season while, you know, trying to pitch at such a high level. So I think that's what we're going to see. We're going to start seeing more of that evolution on him taking care of himself better so that he can keep, you know, stay in that zone and keep his body in that zone so that all of these mechanics and the pitching motions can be duplicated and the muscle memory can actually start working better because your body is agreeing with you.
Well, I think so. Severino seems like a max effort guy, and especially in the first half. I mean, he had a complete game in Houston. He had a lot of performances where he was pitching into the eighth inning. Do you think maybe the Yankees need to manage him a little bit more in the first half just to keep him fresher? Or maybe Severino needs to understand, I'm in this for the long haul. I can't be pitching every game in May like it's game 7 of the playoffs.
No, I don't think you could take that mentality and the way that a guy throws away from him at any point. I think that if
the Red Sox did it with Chris Sale.
Yeah, but he's also a lot older and he's been breaking down. I mean, he's had injury issues. So when you're looking at what Severino's doing at this point, you don't want to take a younger guy and say, hey, pitch differently because you're trying to, you know, max out the length of your season. You got to figure out how to pitch like you pitch and keep your body in a point that is best for you to keep going. I mean, I think that's just a learning thing that he has to figure out with himself. Because if you start changing the way that you pitch like that, at this point in his career, I think you could start messing with bad things. But to his credit, and the Yankees realized that, and he realized that he was fatigued. There was a fatigue that set in the middle of the season, and that's why, you know, the season started getting away from him a little bit. And he realized that, identified it, and did something about it. Getting on with a nutritionist and working on, you know, what he's taking in and out of his body and losing some weight. I saw he was cutting out sugar. Like, there's a lot of little things that he's doing to keep himself in a better position to pitch deeper into the season at a very high level. I think that's where it is.
It's just interesting because Severino, by no means did we think he was heavy last year. I mean, he looked trim. He looked like he was in very good shape, but he still figured, I need to lose 10 pounds. That might help me throughout the season. You look at the flip side, Sabathia, the guy's hovering around 300 pounds, and that's where he pitches well deep into the season. He uses his weight as almost like a fuel source.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think it necessarily means that he like got 10 pounds skinnier. I think that the weight got transformed, you know, whether it's muscle or
Do you understand how weight works?
I do, but at the same time, you have to also, it depends where it is. It depends where that
weight
is.
But it's still 10 pounds lighter. Yes, I understand that.
He's not getting skinnier and weaker, because that's kind of what it sounds like. Oh, I lost 10 pounds, I'm skinnier and weaker. But that's not the case a lot of times. You could be stronger and reposition and redistribute that weight so that it's in better places and still get slimmer. But
well, yeah, he cut stronger out, and it more. It sounds fit. Like he cut out sugar and carbs. If you're going to cut out sugar and carbs, you're just going to lose 10 pounds.
You're going to be more lean.
Yeah,
your muscle will be more
it's
lean.
It's going to happen,
and that will be more effective for him. So, look, he'll figure it out. That's the thing. Like, I like the fact that he's trying to figure it out and understanding that it was a fatigue thing. And hey, I'm going to do something about it.
Montgomery talked and said that he's optimistic that he will pitch in the Bronx at some point this season. He said his goal was in the next 4 months.
Yeah. And that's good, right? That's kind of where we saw him middle of the season. That's right around the same time we thought he was going to be. And the way that the rotation is lining up, like that's going to be great to have him coming around that time, because
it's
we don't know
where
we'll be.
It's hard to predict though, because we don't know how he's going to react from the surgery once he starts throwing more regularly. He had the surgery last June.
Yeah.
For a pitcher, it's a year. It's a year recovery. So we're looking at June and then ramp up time, probably going to get some minor league appearances. So I think second half is the most realistic for Montgomery.
And again, that's a good thing for, I think, the way that the season plays out too. I mean, the Yankees seem to have a good depth going into the season with the pitching staff. I'm knocking on wood right now, but having a guy like Montgomery come back, who, you know, can, eat innings, pitch well, deeper into a game. Hopefully, you know, he comes back like that. It's like adding another solid pitcher at the deadline. That's a good thing.
You can't bank on that though.
No, but you can also, you know, that it's going to be at some point in the second half. You can't bank on it, but it's also you're adding another guy to the mix. That's the point. Like, you're not banking on that. You shouldn't have to bank on that, but you're adding a guy to the mix, and we'll see where he is at that point.
He's not mentioned in the depth pieces because Boone talked to the media, and we have it's the first week of spring training when Boone can do a 30-minute press conference, and I have like 45 bullet points from the one press conference.
Right.
But he talked, they asked him, do you feel confident in the rotation depth? And he said, we love what we did this offseason, and then we do feel we have depth in the system. And he named Herman, Loaisiga, Chance Adams, Michael King, and Luis Sessa. Did not mention Jordan Montgomery.
Well, I think that everybody knows kind of what he is as a quantity, and he's not going to bank on an injured player right now. He's just not going to do that. But the timetable says that he's going to come back around this time, and we'll see where he is. If he is a similar guy in the sense that he's strong and feels good, it's a huge, that could be a huge addition. But it also could be a thing where he's, you know, just working through things in the minor leagues and is ready to come up you know, if there was an uncertainty that came up with our rotation. And as we know how the season goes, that usually does happen, and probably before that point. So it's just more arms that is a good thing.
I was listening to the press conference at work, and the first question that Boone was asked was, do you feel that this team as currently constituted is better than last year? And he said, I hope so. I just hate those questions, because what is Boone going to say? He's not going to say no.
We're worse. Yeah, we're
no,
worse.
We're worse. Okay, thanks. Thanks for your time. Let's wrap it up here. I'll see you next spring training. Like, he can only say one thing. It's just such a dumb intro question. Like, ask something specific. Let's get some information here.
Yeah, I mean, and then talking about, like, can we perform it? Like, you know, of course, the goal is to outperform what you did the year before. No shit. Like,
that's the
goal
for the Yankees, the Padres, the Royals, the Indians, everybody.
Yeah. So, yeah, Boone was kind of looking at some of these questions and yeah, just giving his cliche generic answer, because there's really nothing else to say.
Exactly.
Yes, we want to be better. Yes. Yes, I think our guys did well. Yeah, they're all coming in great shape. Proud of them. They're working hard. This is what we're saying. This is what I'm going to say about everything. So keep asking.
Everyone is in the best shape of their life. This is the best shape they've ever been in.
I'm very happy with everybody. I have close relationships with everybody now. I've had dinner with every single person in the lineup.
Well, he did go down to the Dominican Republic and spend some time with Sanchez and his family. I thought that was an interesting takeaway.
So that was something that, you know, it was public when he did it. We all knew that he was going down there and meeting with them. And the fact that he went down and there's some more details that have come out about their relationship, I think, and Sanchez has talked about it more too. And it's clear that Boone is making that concerted effort with these guys to be involved with their development, be involved as a mentor and just a guy that's on your side to get you to a better point in your career. And, you know, obviously Sanchez had a ton of struggles last year. And I think that Boone took a very, you know, forward-thinking approach.
Well, no, passive approach.
No, a forward-thinking approach right now, getting in front of it and talking to the guy and saying, hey, look, you had struggles. Let's move forward. You could be better from those struggles. And I think that's what we've been hearing about their conversations and how he does want to be better. And he knows that he had these struggles and he's learning from them and he's going to be better. And like all the good things are coming out of these conversations. So it's a good thing that they're doing that. And Boone is taking, you know, interest in the family and going down there meeting with his wife. Like, I think all that stuff is extremely positive.
I thought you meant last year during the season, he took a passive approach to Gary Sanchez, where we saw Girardi take more of an aggressive approach. And that was one of the things that Girardi was criticized for, is that he and Sanchez didn't get along. He was too hard on Gary Sanchez. But then you look at the box score and Sanchez was producing. So,
right.
Okay, you don't like me, but you're putting up all-star numbers. Like,
I mean, we've seen that in the past here with Gary Sanchez when he got in trouble when he was going to go to the Futures game. I think he was in Tampa or Trenton at that time, and the Yankees held him back it was Arizona fall ball. They held him back from that, and it was the Futures game too, I think. They held him back, and it was kind of a demotion. Like, it made news, the fact that Gary Sanchez didn't go, and it was because of some of those, you know, some of those like quote attitude issues with him, and he got disciplined essentially.
He
and
got disciplined.
What happened
also
after
in
that?
Trenton.
What happened
he got
after
benched
that?
He, in Trenton too.
But he looked at that and did well afterwards. It's like when adversity hits this guy, he kind of looks it in the face and does better.
But how many times does adversity have to hit and he has to get reprimanded before he finally just makes a change for the good? Like, if you're telling me every year and a half they gotta have a sit down with him?
Well, I don't think last year was the same type of setback. I think last year we saw a guy that was frustrated and injured and just not healthy and just not in a good place. And I think that's what, you know, kind of escalated and snowballed into more things, struggles defensively, offensively. So I don't think it was, you know, internally, I don't think they think it was an attitude issue. I think a lot of fans might think that because of what we saw. But I don't think internally they think that. I just think they saw a guy that struggled, was not at full peak ability because of his health. And, you know, just they want to make sure his head's in the right place coming back from that type of season. And again, all signs are pointing towards optimism with him.
They asked Boone about Tulowitzki, and he sort of skated around the question. He said, we feel confident in the workouts we put him through that he is healthy and will be able to contribute. Didn't really mention that, did not really lead on how much they're going to push him, but he's only going to be playing shortstop.
Only playing shortstop, but he did say something that I thought was interesting. He said that the injury issues that plagued him in the past are now behind him. That is something that he did say about the injuries. He's not going to come out and say, yeah, he's going to be, you know, playing this many games. We expect this from him. Like, no, they're trying to keep the glass, you know, within manage. It's not half full. It's not half empty. They're just, they're trying to like give some unclear expectations, I think, to fans so that we don't, you know, expect Troy Tulowitzki coming out there. We're expecting hopefully a physically able guy to go out there and perform to the best of his abilities. But the fact that he said that he's over the injuries that plagued him and they're confident in that, like, that's positive, I guess. Let's prove it now.
But again, what's he going to say? He's not going to say, oh yeah, we have Tulowitzki in spring training. Like, I don't know, that guy's ankles are totally shot. I hope he can just stand up. He's not going to say that. He's going to say we're confident in the tests we put him through and that his body is healthy and he can be the player. He could be a positive player. Like,
for a guy that's walking around on 55-year-old heels, he looks really good. He looks really good.
Those glass heels. Between Bird's glass foot and his glass heels, man. Boone was very vague on the dinner that they had with Manny Machado. He literally just said it was a good dinner and just like left it hanging out there.
Yes. I mean, what, again, you're not going to speculate on a player that's not signed, especially when you have a guy that's already, you know, playing that position at a high level that offensively, at least, but defensively, you know, you're getting behind your guy at third base, Andujar, who, again, they have good things to say about. They feel good about the way he's worked on his defense in the offseason. The fact that he has, you know, come in with the mentality to improve on that side of the ball. Look, I think that he's going to say all the right things because he's got to make sure that he's taking care of his clubhouse too. And right now in his clubhouse, and really there's no one out there saying that it's going to be anything different, really, is going to be Miguel Andujar. So why are we talking about this other guy who's not signed, probably not going to be on our team?
Well, why are we talking? You know why they're talking.
Still,
about
why
it.
Are we talking about it? Still, how about that? Is that better? Because nobody wants to talk about it.
Because they also haven't signed yet, and I saw some more rumors that maybe they're not going to even sign until mid March, which I think is just ridiculous. You're signing a guy like Harper or Machado, guys who you when you're signing is going to be for $200+ million, ideally there for the next decade on your team, and you're going to bring him in a couple weeks before the season starts.
What if they what if this is like a Le'Veon Bell situation where they're just like, I'm not playing, I'm not going to play, or I'm going to wait until the All-Star break and then sign with somebody who's going to has a contender and can win the World Series, and then you're going to sign me to an insane amount of money for half of a year, and then I'm going to do this all again next year.
Or all of the free agents just band together and start their own team, like a replacements league.
Yeah, they would have to get some approval for that, or else they'll be playing against each other, a lot of inter-squad. But reworking the schedules, that would be a tough task. That would be bold. That would be a bold move by those guys if they could pull that off. But
they could just stream it online and there'd be no blackout restrictions.
That would be interesting. That would buck against the entire system. For all, we're getting screwed. Let's just do it ourselves. They're going to become the what's the new football league? The
AAL or
yeah,
AFL?
Yeah. Let's, because the American ratings football. And it was all over social media. Like they
did.
They
you
had,
watch any of that?
I saw clips. I didn't watch any of it live. I mean, I'm not going to watch. I don't want to watch bad football personally. But they had a good launch, you know. So maybe they'll do something like that. Maybe it'll be like a beer league baseball.
Everyone was talking about, because they're just so football hungry. It was like the week after the Super Bowl, but have they played again? I don't know. I haven't heard anything about it other than that first weekend.
I really have no idea. I know that they have a good social media department with a bunch of designers in there that, in fact, Danny, who's the intern that worked with us last year, did a lot of the wallpapers, is doing some freelance work with them too. So I see a lot of their stuff all over social, but maybe they'll band together and do something like that.
Why don't they have a crossover league?
Like, in what way? Oh, you
like,
mean football, baseball?
Like Machado and Harper and like Trent Richardson and all the players in that AAFL. What is it called, by the way?
I'm going to look it up.
Can band together and play.
Yeah, I don't want to see that either.
First base. So I found this comment
Alliance of America Football League.
He was asked about first base, and he said Voit definitely comes in with a leg up as the starter, but he still believes in Bird. They still really want Greg Bird to be a thing. He, even with what Luke Voit did last September and in the playoffs, are only saying he has a leg up on Bird. I mean, I guess I understand that they're not going to anoint him the starter at this point because there's still a lot that could happen. But damn, if all that Voit did and all the nothingness that Bird did last year, if all that gets him is a leg up, that's pretty telling.
You don't see this as a behind-the-scenes shot talking about a leg up? I mean, it's a nice little subtle shot there to Greg Bird's foot.
No, had said he's got 1 foot ahead of Bird, then maybe that would have been a shot.
Yeah. Look, I mean, they're not going to anoint him because of the short sample size. That's the reason. And Bird's been in the system forever. Everybody was loving him forever. And yes, they do want him to be a thing because he's a left-handed bat. And the Yankees need a left-handed bat. So, yeah, they do want him to be a thing. They would love it if he came out there and outperformed Voit, as long as both of them were performing. As long as it wasn't like Voit's hitting 200 and Bird's hitting 220 and, you know, not producing. And we're talking about, a marginally better but still not good player. They want him to beat him out.
I think if they have a relatively equal spring, I think Bird wins the job.
Well, I don't think initially. I think they would give it to Voit still. But it's going to be a platoon. That's what it's going to be.
Some injury updates. So Didi's doing well. They hope to have him back for the bulk of the season. That's good news. Unfortunate news on Michael King. That was one of the guys that Boone mentioned as a depth piece. He's shut down for 3 weeks for a stress reaction in his elbow. And if he is not feeling recovered after those 3 weeks, an MRI would be the next step.
Yeah, and you don't want to see anything having to do with an elbow, obviously, and a pitcher and a young guy like that. So it's concerning to me that he's, you know, coming up with an elbow injury already. Hopefully it's just a little bit of tendonitis or something like that, that, you know, a little rest can solve it, because that's definitely a guy that, you know, I think we've all been circling to keep an eye out and to see how he's going to pitch, because he came up through the system so fast and so
furious.
Yeah,
I jinxed him on the podcast last week, if you don't remember. Yeah. I mentioned him in the mailbag question as the dark horse candidate to make an impact. And then boom, 2 days later, shut down.
Yep. Hopefully it's not much. The fact that Didi is coming back, like, I they're talking about bulk of the season. What does that mean? That's vague, but that
could be 82 games.
Right? The bulk of the season seems like more than half. I mean, that's when
right,
I
right, but
when
it
I
could just
bulk,
be one more than half.
The fact is that I think he's doing very well. I think he's progressing extremely well, and you know, I've said this all along, man. Didi is one of those guys who just outperforms. What he's an overachiever in every aspect of his life, and I expect him to be back sooner than we all think. Like I really do think he's going to be back before, you know, a lot of the projections, whether it's beginning of June, or I could see him coming back pretty quick.
And in the most stunning news to come out of the press conference, Jacoby Ellsbury is not starting out in spring training. He's still doing rehab in Arizona. Brian Cashman said he's doing 6 to 8 hours of physical therapy
every day.
That's a 50-hour week if you're doing it 7 days. He's doing 50 hours of physical therapy?
No.
That is the
not.
Most amazing thing I've ever heard.
He's not. That's he's not.
He I mean,
is
what does
not
that mean?
Doing 6 to 8 hours of physical therapy. I don't know what that means. Maybe that's sitting on, you know,
it could be sitting in a hot tub for all we know. Like
he's at Lake Havasu with his feet up and just like rotating his ankle. You know what I mean? Like that's his physical therapy with an umbrella drink. He's not doing baseball things. Nobody could see this. This is all very, very behind closed doors, vague in Phoenix. What? Why is he out there?
That's where he lives in the offseason.
He's not in the Pacific Northwest. Look. What else is out in Phoenix? National League teams. That's what's out there. That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that there's going to be a National League team that somehow he latches onto and is injured for them.
Right. Yeah. Because they really like guys that can't even get to spring training because their plantar fasciitis is too bad. It's going to swell up on the flight to Tampa. That's why he's not
right.
There.
He's working out at the Giants facilities. That's what's happening. Or he's at Lake Havasu on a jet ski, rotating his ankle 6 to 8 hours a day.
Danny Farquhar. So we haven't really mentioned him yet. A lot of people having eyes on him. Could he make the team? Could he be that sort of Adam Warren, long man in relief out of the bullpen role? He's kind of a feel good story.
He is a feel good story. I mean, the guy coming back from, it was a brain hemorrhage. I mean, there's, you know, the fact that he's playing baseball and is healthy, and you could tell that he's just over the moon for being healthy and playing baseball again at this point. The fact that he's back with the Yankees, it is a very good story. It's a guy that, you know, has talent and can come in and play a, like an Adam Warren type role, but there's just not very many spots in the Yankees, you know, whole roster, let alone their bullpen. But it's a guy that you just want to see healthy and hopefully could contribute. But the fact that he's on the field doing baseball things, like, that's awesome.
But that last man in the bullpen role that can give you some innings is definitely an open spot.
Yeah, but Luis Sessa doesn't have any options. What are you talking about? There's no more options, bro.
Luis Sessa, yeah.
He looks at every single one of our stories on Instagram, every one of them.
Hey, come on the podcast, Luis.
I'm a fan of his.
Let's talk about CC. So he officially announced his he will retire at the end of the 2019 season. He had a press conference on Saturday. They also said he will be slow played to start spring training because of the heart issues and his knee surgery in the offseason. We've sort of mentioned CC and how much, obviously, he has done for the organization. And we had a mailbag last week about, you know, what's our favorite Sabathia moments. We mentioned a couple of them. But I think, you know, we're going to get a little bit of a retirement tour. He's not going to get the presents from every team, something like Jeter or Mariano got. But it will be a storyline for the Yankees this season is, let's do it for CeCe. It's his last year.
I mean, it absolutely is. I think it's one of those good internal things to happen because he is a leader on this team. He's a max effort guy. Obviously, no one ever would question what CeCe has done and you know, brought to the team as far as sacrifice, as far as, you know, ability, as far as max effort. Like, the guy is just, you know, a team guy all the way. So I think these guys are really going to rally behind him and that will actually be a storyline. They want him to go out as a king on top. They want him to do that because they love him. And I think that goes a long way. I really do. I think that can build and bond a clubhouse even more. I love it. I think it's a really, really good thing to have with this team.
And if they do win the World Series, maybe him and Amber are going to have another World Series, baby.
That's right. You know, I don't know if he wants another kid.
That poor kid. Like, that is a hilarious quote by Amber for everybody except that kid.
I don't know. I think I like it as that kid. I'm like, okay, that's pretty sweet.
You do not want to hear your parents tell you that you are a blank baby.
Well, guess what? You know what's happening unless you don't know how babies are born.
No, it's one of those things. Don't ask, don't tell. Just don't even do the math. He doesn't want to figure it out.
Nah. I
ignore it.
I would be very happy if I was a World Series baby. I'd be very happy. I would be like, yeah, I was a World Series baby. My dad was the man. My mom's awesome, and I'm a World Series baby. So that's it. I came out of a championship.
So we've talked just in vague terms. Like, the Sabathia contract, the mega contract they gave him was 100% worth it. You agree?
Yeah. Those are one of those ones that worked out.
Yeah.
Not very many of them.
And that's just using the eye test, using what we know. They won a championship. Sabathia was the ace on that staff in 2009. He's been a clubhouse leader. He's reinvented himself. I mean, think about back in 2015. He's coming off back-to-back seasons in which he struggled, and he was going to rehab for alcoholism. I think when we were doing that podcast after 2015, we were saying, that's it for CC. Like, I'd be shocked if he even pitches again. And here we are in 2019 talking about him being the number five starter and still contributing. But I did a breakdown of his contract, and the numbers also back it up that he has been worth it for the Yankees. So they have paid him from 2009 to 2018, $215.855 million, and he has produced a 29.7 WAR over that time. That is $7.26 million per WAR. That is right in line with what the average free agent is worth on the open market between those times, which is between $6 and $9 million. So the contract was worth it from a dollars and cents standpoint.
Yeah, and then, you know, just from obviously a production standpoint too, it was beautiful. This is one of those things when you look at long-term deals and you want to find some of those deals that actually work out for both the player and the team and everybody involved, and this is one of them. I mean, CC has been... You know, I think when we saw him come over and you know, before he came over, pitched for Milwaukee, everybody kind of understood and realized what kind of a guy he was. And I think, you know, it was a known quantity in the league, but I think he really kind of made that known to the general public and every fan who didn't watch him on a daily basis, what he did when he was with Milwaukee and how he was so selfless in the pursuit of a World Series title, knowing damn well that he was coming up for free agency, didn't really have... you know, a lot of, you didn't have to do that for Milwaukee. It's not like
pitch every 3 days for a month.
He it owed the Milwaukee Brewers absolutely nothing. And it's not like there was a history there. He did it because he was on the team at the moment. He saw an opportunity to go after a World Series, and that was his number one goal. And he put his body on the line, his free agency on the line, his money on the line, you know, that he's done numerous times now, and showed what kind of guy he is, what kind of teammate he is, and what kind of player he is. So, he's just an all around, exceptional teammate and just one of those guys that I think should be anointed. So
100%. I'm sure his agent was in his ear at that time saying, you know, you don't have to do this. This is not a smart move.
Right. And it turned out to be a great move for him.
Yeah,
it really did.
Yeah.
Because he was true to himself.
Because he stayed healthy, but then he did something that every fan around baseball, no matter what team you root for, respected.
Absolutely. He stayed true to himself. Who was it? Jose Reyes, right? Who pulled himself out of the game to win the batting title with the Mets. Like,
happened across baseball like numerous times.
But that one was pretty public. It was pretty like square in your face, obvious. Yeah, there are things that you know are played to for baseball, and like they'll pull people out or they won't give them as many to get some records. But the fact that CC said, "I don't really care. Like, I know I'm going to get paid, and I know what's coming up, but my body be damned. I'm going to go out there and do my job."
And I mean, maybe he, I remember back in 2009, remember he got off to a little bit of a rocky start, and some people thought maybe the miles on his arm at the end of 2008 were contributing to those struggles. And maybe they were, but he certainly rebounded from there.
It could have been, you know, one of those more short-term things, because he pitched an insane amount at the very end of the season.
He went a solid month pitching every on 3 days rest.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
It was. And I think one of those things, like, yeah, you're a little worried when you sign a guy like that after what he did, but at the same time, you're like, damn right. We just got this guy who puts his, puts everything out there. And as a fan, that's all you can ask for.
In reality, it was probably 4 days rest. I'm probably exaggerating. It was probably 4 days rest, right?
I thought it was 2 days rest.
He pitched every day in the month.
He pitched every single day.
He pitched a doubleheader. All 18 innings.
The dude is a machine. That story will get told way better in 10, 15, 20, 50
right. Every
years.
every decade, it's going to say he's going to pitch on one shorter day's rest.
Absolutely, as it should.
Let's talk about the lineup. So the last takeaway from the Boone press conference, he said that Hicks was in the quote leadoff mix, but he didn't tinker a lot with ideas this winter for the lineup. And last week we had a mailbag question asking about where Aaron Judge should hit. If you should hit two, if you should hit three. I said I would hit Judge three and move Stanton to number two because that might get him some more protection. And he also had went on a tear in Miami when he was hitting number two. I did some more analysis on it. I did some reading on this topic. And that's really a sort of a baseball cliche that, oh, bat a guy number two because he's going to get protection from the number three hitter. You can get him going. Like, those are all baseball cliches that really don't have data to back it up.
It's true. And I think everybody, it's fun to talk about. It's a fun topic to talk about. But when you start looking at the data and all these, I mean, you put all the data together like you had in here, when you're looking over 162 games, especially with this Yankees team, I mean, I'm looking at certain things and I see, you know, the way data is produced, you know, there are holes in anything. You could find holes in it. But when you look at what the Yankees did last year and the fact that they had a solid hitter pretty much up and down. Like, there's a lot of variation that could be done to this lineup to get to a similar place. It's just not as clear because there's not such a huge drop off when you get to the bottom.
Right. And obviously there's so many variables, right? That go into it. Like, is Gary Sanchez struggling? Is this player dealing with fatigue? Does he have a stomach virus? Like, there's so many different things from day to day that managers have to tinker with. It's not just what does the computer spit out.
Right. And you know, it's still fun to talk about. Like, don't get me wrong, I love talking about the lineup. I think it's a fun thing to talk about, whether you're right or wrong. It's just one of those things that I think all of us have been tinkering with and playing manager for our entire lives.
It's easiest thing. That and bullpen management is the easiest thing to play.
Yes, but
to
the lineup
manager with.
The lineup, it just has like a special place in all of our hearts. You know what I mean? Like, it's just fun to put out a lineup and to sign that lineup card and to do it. And by adding, and everybody has a different take on the way it should be, whether it's a righty lefty thing or where you where you should put your power hitters, where you want your speed, if there is speed. Like, I think it's different, and it tells more about the person and how they would draw up their ideal lineup, and then they're making, you know, those assessments. They're just basically projecting it onto whatever the current players are on the Yankees team.
And that's why I want to talk about.
Yeah. And that's why I like having Judge, you know, I mean, I agree with you having him at the three spot. Like that's where I think he should be. I don't want Stanton at the two spot, but again, these are all semantics when we're talking about this. When you play 162 games or however many they play, if it's 150 plus, a lot of the stuff could blend together because of the amount of games that they're putting there. And when you start looking at the different combinations, I just want a high on base guy on the top. I want another guy who can manage the bat and do a lot of good things with the bat, whether it's,
but see, those are all, but those are all, these are what I want. Those are all cliches though, right?
And these are what I want.
So the leadoff hitter is a guy who can get on base and maybe steal a base. The number two hitter can handle the bat, make contact, move over a runner. The number three hitter is your best hitter. The number four hitter has the most power. Like, these are all like the typical cliches that have been in baseball since the Babe Ruth era.
Yes.
These are like the guys in Moneyball sitting around the table talking to Billy Beane. Like, that's what these guys say.
Right. And I like it.
Right. But what I want to talk about, it makes me happy. I want to talk about what analytics say is the optimal batting order. So there's differing opinions and stuff, but the optimal batting order scores between 5 to 15 more runs over a season than the typical batting order. Typical does not mean worst. Typical is just average. So it's 5 to 15 more runs produced over a full season.
That's now, a pretty big variation when you're talking about 5 runs and then 15 runs. Like, when you're looking at percentages, that's a very large difference.
I agree. Five runs could be maybe 1 or 2 wins. 15 runs could be 3 or 4 wins. Like, that's a big difference.
15 is 3 times 5. So, I mean, when I have...
Hold on,
like,
I got to carry it. Yeah,
that's like saying 100 runs or 300 runs. I mean, that's a big difference.
But if we're... So a lot of... analytics people say the batting order, the only thing that matters is you should get your best hitter the most amount of at-bats, your second best hitter the second most at-bats, and so on. So using that method, and I used 2018 WRC plus to just have one sort of all-encompassing run production metric, the Yankees' optimal batting order would have been Judge, Andujar, Hicks, Stanton, Didi, Glaber, Brett Gardner, Gary Sanchez, Neil Walker. I took out Voit and McCutcheon because they did not have enough plate appearances to qualify for the Yankees on WRC+. If you want to throw them in there, they actually would have been towards the top of the lineup because in the short sample sizes, they had higher WRC pluses than some of the other guys. But look at the top of that batting order. Judge, Andujar, Hicks, Stanton. I don't think if you asked any Yankees fan, they would come up with that top four. Leading in that order.
No, well, you'd see, right, that you'd see two of those guys in there, but you wouldn't see that order for sure. Maybe three of them if you're looking at Hicks as the leadoff, but you wouldn't see those guys in that order. But I mean, when you're looking at the production and what happened last year, it makes sense if we're looking at just the guys who have produced the most. You know, that does make sense. Those were the best.
And the reason you want you would do this is because you want your best hitter to get up most often. Like, right. That, from a conceptual standpoint, that makes a lot of sense.
I get that.
And my you can problem only, is,
go ahead, go sorry. Ahead.
No, you can only control, like, the argument against it is, well, you're guaranteeing your best hitter to bat with the bases empty every game to start the game. And that's true. But you can only control that one time.
Right.
You don't know who's going to be on base the next time he comes up. Most of the time, he's not going to be the leadoff guy. And... all else being equal?
The other side of that, though, is like if you have a really crappy 7-8-9, then your
National League, it probably doesn't make sense, right?
Your chances batting someone.
Nine?
Yeah, well, even if it's just not you have Brendan Ryan batting ninth, you have a defensive guy playing, you know, and he's batting at the bottom of the order.
Adini Hechavarria.
Your percentage, he actually outperformed last year offensively, right, but okay. You have a much higher percentage chance of having nobody on base if the bottom of your order is shit. Whereas 100%. The Yankees have,
and
some
if the Yankees
hitters.
Have Aaron Hicks hitting leadoff, and he's getting on base 36 to 38% of the time,
right.
That means Aaron Judge is going to bat in the first inning 36 to 38% of the time with a guy on base.
Yes, so you could see more damage being done if you're loading up high on base percentage guys at the top, and then loading them the power guys behind them because of those percentages. Because if they were in the leadoff spot, yes, they're not going to be there with anybody on base in the first inning, but the chances are also a lot higher that they will be on, they will be up with nobody on base because the guys at the bottom of the order are dog shit.
But they're not for the Yankees.
But they're not for the Yankees specifically.
And it's a balancing act that you have to, that the manager and the, and it's not just Boone who's making the line. Do you agree with that? It's a lot of input from Cashman. And
I think it's a collective team effort.
The nerd department.
I think it's a team effort, but I think Boone has the final say.
Okay. But it's a lot of balancing act between, you know, what do we want to trade off? Do we want to just get Aaron Judge the most at-bats, or do we want to put him in the most damaging spots, right? Yeah, do we want to get him the most opportunities to do the most damage?
Right. We definitely want Aaron Judge up in the first inning. That's a fact. That's what we want.
So you're not batting him fourth?
Not batting him fourth. I want him up in the first inning. No doubt about it.
So I think it's really two or three. I think two or three makes sense for the Yankees and Aaron Judge.
Yes. And that's why I want him in the... Again, someone's got to win that two spot. That's the first and foremost. But yeah, 2-3. That's where he should be. Like, ideally, again, I've said this a million times, but ideally, if we see, you know, Gleyber become the guy that I think he's going to be, I think Gleyber Torres could be an absolutely beautiful number two guy.
And if
he could even be a great number one.
Well, if it's Gleyber Torres in the first half of last year, I mean, I totally agree with you, but that's another thing that it's up to the manager. How's the guy performing right now?
Right.
And you shift your lineup accordingly.
Right. Don't get set in stone. That's a good thing to have. Do not put yourself in a position where you have to put the same guy in the same lineup slot every single time. Don't put yourself in that position. Make the expectations to a point where they realize that this is going to be a fluid situation and it's going to depend on the day, the pitcher, the park we're in, what time the game is played, what we did the night before. All of these things are going to factor into what we're doing on a given basis. You will not be hitting in the same spot every day. I promise you that. That's what I would like. That's a good message.
And if you look at Gleyber Torres' first half, he had a 350 on base percentage and a 905 OPS. Awesome.
Love
and
it.
In the second half, 329 on base percentage, 733 OPS. Right. Not as awesome.
Right. We both agree. I think that we think that he was still had some lingering hip issues, and this all, like, we're looking at a guy like Gleyber Torres. Again, another situation similar to what Severino, learning my body, trying to figure out the best way to go throughout an entire season so that I can be productive from beginning to end. It's going to be one of those situations where you have to figure it out. You can't just say, now I'm going to be just as good as I was, but I don't feel great. So what's up? How am I supposed to do this? No, you got to train yourself. You got to feel your body out, and then you got to make adjustments. And that's what these guys are going to do. That's all part of the continuation and, you know, evolution of a player.
And the final thing I'll say in the lineup, and it's kind of just summarizing everything we've said. If you're the Yankees in 2019, you know how your team's going to be scoring runs. It's going to be with a lot of home runs. There's still going to be strikeouts. There's going to be home runs, but you want to maximize those home runs. So what do? You put on base percentage in front of those home run guys. I think that's got to be overall the main concern. Who gets on base in front of Gary Sanchez, Giancarlo Stanton, and the other and Aaron Judge? That's what you need to be doing.
I mean, that's back to the, you know, standard way of thinking. So yeah,
it's standard, but it's also, I mean, it's coupling the fact with get your best players the most at bats and get your guys who get on base in front of them.
Right, so a guy like Brandon LeMahieu, the Matthew, should be close to the top of the order. Like, that's when you're
who's Brendan LeMahieu?
Or
DJ LeMahieu.
DJ. Who is Brendan LeMahieu? Is he a hockey player?
Brendan Ryan and DJ LeMahieu, love child.
When I'm looking at LeMahieu and Torres, like, those are the two guys I'm circling for number two spot. Like, they would be an ideal number two guy in my lineup. That's who I love. And this is assuming Torres can, you know, get back to high OBP guy.
Wow, we really nerded out there for a minute, huh?
I just went along for the ride, man.
Yankees were named AL Most Improved Team by Jason Stark's annual spring training preview, in which he polled 30 managers, coaches, executives around the league. Yankees showed up on 27 of the 30 results. They were followed by the Twins, the Rays, the Angels, and the White Sox. But I just think this is ironic because a lot of Yankees fans out there say that the Yankees have had a failure of an offseason, and it's because they did not sign Machado or Harper. Yet, experts around the league say the Yankees were most improved.
You know, I think it's funny that we have a most improved team at this point when there's still dozens of free agents and the two best free agents are still sitting out there unsigned. So I think that we can all take this with a grain of salt. But at the same time, you're looking at what other managers are saying that the Yankees have done well. And that's good, right? Like, I think the most attention has gone to the bullpen and what they've done in the bullpen. And I think some people would say, well, David Robertson was on the team and now we're replacing him with another guy that had a great season last year, but it's a similar good bullpen. It's just a lot of unknowns out there. So I think Jason Stark needs to bump back his ratings a little bit to now we have to adjust to the times.
Well, he doesn't, it's not his ratings. Signs. He needs to adjust his poll when he releases this poll. But let's look at the teams who are on that list. Twins, Rays, Angels, and White Sox. Only the White Sox have really been rumored for either of those two big free agents. So You're telling me if the White Sox sign one of those free agents that they would vault to the top of the list? I don't think so.
No, but you just don't know. You just don't know. You don't know who's going to get them. You don't know who's going to go out and sign a guy like Keuchel. Who's going to get Kimbrel? Like, there's still big names out there that could be signed. And
what
after you're looking at the White Sox and, you know, they're projecting to get at least one of those guys. Who knows if they get one of those guys? Maybe they just like, okay, now that we did get one of these guys, we got to go out and sign the pitcher as well.
So the Twins were second on that list, and I'm kind of like,
maybe they're thinking of, like, you know, Michael Pineda coming back.
They signed Nelson Cruz, which is a good signing. He's still
a good signing. Yes.
They got a new manager, Rocco Baldelli, pride of Rhode Island.
There you go. Yeah, a little Rhode Island factor.
I love Rocco Baldelli.
You're dismissing Michael Pineda, but that's fine.
Who?
Maybe they all think that Pineda is you know, the second coming, like we all thought he might be.
Is John Ryan, don't call him J.R. Murphy, still there?
I don't think so. I think he's with
he got traded
somewhere else in the National League. Maybe San Diego, somewhere out there.
San Diego.
He's all out right there, out of sight, out of mind, but he's somewhere else.
So did the Yankees win the John Ryan Murphy for Aaron Hicks trade?
Yeah, I think we won. I think that one is planted. I still think the jury's out on Jesus Montero and Michael Pineda, though. Still, you know, I kind of want the guy that got into a fight with the cotton candy guy or the ice cream guy.
Sandwich vendor.
Yeah, like at least there was a little bit of definitive.
We got floppy arms Pineda, though. That gave us a lot of content.
We saw a guy that was, you know, peak frustration for Yankee fans.
And we'll probably throw a gem against them for the Twins this year.
Zero doubt that he will do that. He will absolutely do that.
All right, let's do some mailbags before we wrap it up. First one is from Setu Saha, boy, at Dat Dude Stew on Twitter. Severino makes one member of the core locked up. Who's next?
So, I mean, when you're looking at the core, and Didi is, I think, the very interesting guy, because all incentive for him is to get back as fast as he possibly can maybe not too fast where he's not productive, but he needs to get back on the field so that he can prove that he's healthy and be a part of this team. Hopefully everything goes well and he does that. I think Didi is an essential piece that they need to sign.
I took this question meaning the core of the younger guys who came up through the system, like Judge, Sanchez.
Okay, so we're looking at just the young. Well, I mean,
Didi is part of the core of the team. Denying that. And I do think that maybe we would have seen.
You're just
extension.
Thinking homegrown guys.
Yeah, I would, but I think the Didi injury throws a wrench in. Maybe the Yankees would have approached him before this season for a contract extension.
Yeah, it's possible.
But I think there's a lot of unknown now with this injury. I still think they're going to sign him, but they could use this as an advantage and maybe get a discount on what they could have already gotten.
I think people realize what Didi is now. I think everybody knows he's a plus-plus defender, and the guy has a lot more pop than anybody ever realized. And as long as he can come back healthy. And again, this is not one of those injuries that would hinder a guy like Didi playing shortstop, you know, offensively or even defensively. It should not hinder him going into the future. So,
his throwing arm and his best attributes as a defender is his powerful arm.
Yeah, I get that. And he's still going to come back. You could, as a Tommy John guy, as a position player, you're still going to be able to come back and throw hard. You're not throwing the repetitions of a max effort like a pitcher. Anyway, the bottom line is they know what he is. And when he's back, he should be back. Like, it shouldn't affect the way that he plays. It's just a matter of when he could come back and how that will play. Because now, for his own free agency and for his own max dollars, you know, timing is of the essence. Like, you got to get back and prove when that you are that same guy, and you just have to show it. I don't think anybody doubts that he will and can be that same guy.
It's going to be interesting after the season, because Betances, Hicks, and Didi are all going to be free agents. Three members of the team that are extremely important to their success.
No doubt. And Hicks was a guy that I had in my offseason plans as someone that they should look at to extend this year as well. But he's becoming such, you know, like, it just keeps going. He just keeps raising the bar. I feel like every time he's been playing, every year he's gotten a little better. He's stayed healthier. Like, we've seen just progression from him. So hopefully he can do that again, and he's going to put himself in a very good position.
I think the next member, young member that came up through the system that will be signed is Judge. It has to be Judge. Both he and Sanchez are arbitration eligible in 2020, but I think we could see an extension with Judge before that arbitration hearing.
Is that because he's a generational talent?
That is because he is...
He's an institutional talent, actually.
So basically, when he goes into that arbitration hearing, all he has to do to win the case is show a picture of the right field stands with the friggin' judges' chambers.
On my first year of a full season, this is what you did for me. You put a section of the stadium.
Named a section of the stadium after me, and half of the stadium is filled with 99 jerseys. Pay me my money.
Everybody understands what's going to happen with Aaron Judge at some point. He's going to sign with the Yankees. The Yankees have to sign him. And the reason being is because he is, as much as I hate the word, a generational / institutional talent. Yankees don't let those institutional guys get away. They just don't. And he's the guy. And when you're looking at the guy of an era, it's Aaron Judge.
Yeah, it's hard to project what he will be over the next 10 years. But if all goes how we think it's going to go, he is going to be talked about like we talk about Derek Jeter owning the era, and other guys owning the era of Yankees. Like, that is Aaron Judge for this
team. To be fair, though, to be very, very, very fair, because this will be the final mark on him, is championships. Jeter went out, won those championships. But you look at a guy like Mattingly. Mattingly is a very loved Yankee. He was the captain. But he's not looked at the same as Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter went out there and won. If Mattingly won those championships, you know, he would be escalated to an even higher level. He was one of my favorite guy growing up. A lot of people who grew up watching, you know, that time frame absolutely loved Don Mattingly. And he was, you know, just the guy. But you got to win the championships to stay at that high level. That being said, Mattingly was a Yankee for his entire career as well. Like, you see these guys who are the guy for that decade or that era, they don't go away. The Yankees will bring them back, and Aaron Judge is that guy.
We made this point earlier in the offseason, but it'll be interesting to see what the Red Sox do with Mookie Betts, because he just got $20 million in his second year of arbitration. They settled before, but he's going to be in his third year of arbitration next year. I'll be curious to see if the Red Sox extend him and what kind of contract they give him. I think that could be a precursor to what we see Judge and the Yankees do.
Right, because it's going to be a ton of money. It's going to be a lot of guaranteed money to turn down if you're Aaron Judge. Knowing how big of a player you are, and the way that history doesn't look back on like players of your size having super long careers. You know, there are exceptions, but you got to take that into account at some point. Like, if something were to go, you know, were to get off with him as far as like an injury or something like that, it could drastically affect the way his career goes. So I think that when he has that opportunity to take an insane amount of guaranteed money in the near future before he would hit free agency, I think he's going to do it. And I think it's going to be a massive contract.
Do you think Randy LaVine is already making notes about Aaron Judge's potential arbitration hearing?
Dude,
and he made even a note Randy about Levine, the New York, and he's gonna play that video in the arbitration hearing.
See, this is the type of guy where they can't go against him though. Like, there's a certain guy you can go out and you can assassinate a character. You can't do that against him.
Oh, the fans would eat ownership alive. You would if be they start bad mouthing Judge.
Because if you go around and you're bad mouthing a guy like Aaron Judge, you're bad mouthing the New York Yankees now. Now you're bad mouthing the institution, because that's what he is. He's the face of the institution. So the fact that you would go out there
and just come up with a new nickname for Judge, the institution.
The institution. He is. You know, like, there's those guys.
I don't hate it.
It's pretty. He's a big dude. Institutions are pretty big.
Okay, let's move on. Next is from Connor Caspian. What should the Yankees do with Tanaka? They have him through 2020. When he hits free agency, he will be entering his age 32 season. Personally, I like the idea of offering him an extension after 2019 because of all the uncertainty with the starting pitching. In the playoffs, he has been valuable, and the Yankees need more second-half pitchers like him. Who cares if he stinks in April and May? In the last 2 years, he has stunk in April and May. I did the breakdown, so he's always been a second-half pitcher, but it's really been pronounced the last two seasons in which he's combined for a 5.05 ERA in the first half and a 3.33 ERA in the second half.
I mean, no doubt about it. He single-handedly ruined Derek Jeter Day. We've seen him go and pitch in big moments in the first half, big moments, I say, like on a big day for the institution and not do so well. So he's an interesting guy. Like, I think Tanaka could age well as far as like being a pitcher. The fact that he has good control of off-speed pitches, like I think that he will be a guy that can pitch longer into and effectively into the end of his career. It's all a matter of like he's got more road on that arm. He's got more work on that arm, I think, than a normal guy at his age because of all of the pitches that he threw in Japan. That will be a factor in a negotiation with him once he hits free agency, if he hits free agency. So, but again, I think he could be an effective pitcher for a while as long as his arm doesn't fall off.
Yeah, I was thinking about Dallas Keuchel as a comp and what we're seeing happen with Keuchel right now still being a free agent. That's kind of where Tanaka is going to be when he's a free agent. Similar in age, similar in past performance, maybe some injury concerns because Tanaka does have those injury concerns. But one sort of variable here is that we could have a new CBA after Tanaka is a free agent. It could be a completely different landscape. So the market could be a lot better for him than it is for Keuchel right now.
It could be better. It could be worse. It could be, it's just,
I don't think it's going to be worse. I don't think there would be an agreement if it's going to be worse.
Well, I mean, when you're, but think about agreements now, like the things that they're going to be bargaining are for getting guys paid earlier in their career. More guys are going to be getting more money earlier in their career.
It might suck for older players.
I think that's the trend that's going to continue to happen. We're seeing it now, but I still think that we're going to see, you know, the owners and baseball not look well upon aging guys. I mean, it's baseball, Susan. It's a young guy's game. When you start seeing older guys go out there, they're not getting paid as well. So I still think it could be a troublesome time for an older pitcher.
So Tanaka is going to make $22 million this year, $23 million in 2020. What are your expectations for Tanaka this year? Are we going to see more of the career first half, second half splits, where in his career he's at a 3.77 ERA in the first half, which is not bad. Second half, better, 3.32. Or are we going to see that sort of like Jekyll and Hyde, 5 ERA in the first half out of nowhere?
You know, I expect, if I'm walking in with this and seeing what Tanaka has done, I feel like we've seen some of the second half improvements. I feel like he's, cut the bullshit. I expect him to be a 3 to 3.5 ERA guy. That's where I see him. I don't really have expectations different from him.
So what the hell is going on in the first half the last 2 years? He's been a bad pitcher in the first half of these last two seasons.
Yeah. It's tough to say. It really is. It's frustrating. It's definitely frustrating to watch, especially when the amount of home runs that he gives up. But we saw a better Tanaka first half last year than we did the year before.
It was a 4.55 ERA in the first half of last year. It was better than the previous year, but
the year
by
before
no means
was atrocious.
The year before was like, okay, atrocious. Did Tanaka forget how to pitch? Yeah. Last year though, 4.5 ERA for Tanaka is bad. That's a full run, more than a run worse than what he was in the second half.
I don't know. I don't want to come out with the other cliche and blame it on things like weather and not getting into it. But yeah, maybe he's better when
the weather gets warmer. We did on what percentage is he throwing his fastball and is he going to use his two seamer and like all this different stuff.
And they were tinkering with him.
Like he was tinkering in the first half a little bit.
They were. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He still throws an insane amount, a lot more breaking stuff. I mean, the Yankees do in general. We know that Larry Rothschild likes to throw a lot of breaking balls. So, when he's locating that fastball and showing it, he's just a much more effective pitcher. That's a fact. Locate that fastball, he's a better pitcher.
And then he had the hammies.
And then he had the hammies, both of them. Yeah, two hammies. That's a tough thing to, you know, pitch through. Come back from. How do you know what to expect?
All right, let's move on. Eric, you. Hey, Andrew and Scott, love the podcast. As always, keep up the great work. Two-part question. With Brett Gardner re-signed for another season and Frazier sniffing the left field position, will we see him retire at the end of the year? Would the Yankees bring him back if he still has some game left? And the second part, will we see his digits retired by the organization? So I put this question in here because last week we casually mentioned that we could see number 11 for Brett Gardner retired as a Yankee. He's been sort of the unofficial clubhouse leader through the last few years, was on the 2009 World Series team. But when you break it down and look at his organizational ranks, 25th in games played, 31st in hits, 34th in extra base hits, 23rd in runs, 3rd in stolen bases. So he's in the top five and something. And 10th in hit by pitch. Those are his best organizations.
Who's number one in hit by pitch? Is Jacoby Ellsbury in his short time up there? He might be.
That's catcher's interference.
Oh, that's right.
I just looked at this. I actually think it was Jeter.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, too. That homeboy would lean over the plate quite a bit. The I think that history will look at Brett Gardner as one of the Yankees who is a consistent, like you said, clubhouse leader, a good guy. They may keep that number on the sideline for a while. I don't think they'll retire it, but I could see them not issuing it for a while. It's like one of those respect things.
Like a Paul O'Neill type thing?
Yes. But that's where I see it.
We've said that's dumb. If you're not going to issue it, just retire it.
You know, it's just a courtesy. There's a lot of other, I mean, numbers are dwindling down now, but it depends on the supply and demand, I guess, with the amount of numbers that are needed. And double
digit.
They're
going to have to go to decimals.
Well, double digit, you know, 99, 77.
11.5 like, will be issued at some point.
These numbers are getting popular. But I just don't, he doesn't, if you want to completely oversaturate the retired numbers thing, then do it. Okay.
It's done. It's already been oversaturated.
I know, but you're going to continue that trend. You can stop that trend. You can.
Can you
I like Brett Gardner. I think he's a great. He's been an awesome player for a long time. I don't think he's a guy that gets his number retired as a New York Yankee. I love Brett Gardner.
It's not a knock on Brett Gardner.
It's not. Like, you should be an all time great.
When like part of it is what have you done in the postseason? He was on the 2009 World Series team, but he was
he's clutch.
Hold on. He was by no means a big part of that 2009 World Series team. Right. He was a platoon outfielder with Melky Cabrera.
Right.
2017, he had that extremely clutch at-bat against Cody Allen in Game 5 of the ALDS, the 12-pitch at-bat. Like, that moment sticks out to me as his postseason moment.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that kind of captures who he is, right? He's a very, very good player, a great defender in one of the hardest left fields in baseball, and he sets up his other teammates for success. Like, I think that's one of the things that should be known about and remembered about Brett Gardner is that the man works the count against everybody. It doesn't matter who's on the mound. If you're a Cy Young candidate or if you're, you know, Joe Schmo that's coming up and you haven't seen much of him, he works the count and does a very good service for everybody behind him. So Brett Gardner is a very good team player, has always been that guy. Like you said, a leader amongst the guys in there, especially in this time when we have such a young team and guys coming up. Like, I think he has played a very pivotal role on the transition of these guys into becoming major leaguers. So even Frazier has talked about him being, you know, a guy that he can look up to, even though they're battling for a position. So I think he's a very important piece to this team. He's a great dude and a very good Yankee. Should not get his number retired.
And to the first part of the question, is this the last year for Brett Gardner? A lot of it depends on what does Clint Frazier turn into. If Clint Frazier doesn't turn into the player we think he can, well, then they're going to be still stuck without a left fielder.
I mean, it's a year-to-year thing. It's just they're going to reassess Brett Gardner on a year-to-year basis at this point. That's what it is and who he is. And not only are they assessing him, but yeah, Frazier, if he's doing well, or you know, whomever else is in the mix for another outfield spot, they're going to see what the situation is and what the landscape is of the current team, what the landscape is of the free agent market, and make a decision. But it's a year-to-year decision at this point.
All right, let's.
But
move
he's
on
also to- he's also talked about wanting to play for, you know, a handful more years. Like I remember him talking.
Does
about
Does he
want
to play for another team though?
He said he wanted to play baseball for more than one more year. So,
do you think Brett Gardner potentially leaving, going to another organization, playing 1, 2, 3 years affects how he's looked at as a Yankee?
I think the fact that you're a career Yankee, when you're looking at Yankee fans, it could a little bit, but not in the grand scheme of things. I don't think so.
Before we move on to the last mailbag questions, quickly want to tease an episode that we're going to have later in the week. We're going to be joined by Dan Szymborski. I might be butchering that last name. Got to ask him about how to say that. He's a Fangraphs writer. He does Zips projections. The Yankees are going to be releasing, or the Fangraphs is going to be releasing the Yankees projections on Tuesday, and we're going to have him on. So look for that episode Wednesday. Hopefully be some good stuff in there. All right. Final question. Beckett Yates, question for the podcast. What do you guys think will be something that comes out of nowhere by a player? For example, Luke Voit doing Luke Voit last September, or Gary hitting under 200? Thanks so much for the great podcast, and go Yankees. So basically this is asking, what's going to be the biggest positive or negative surprise player of 2019? And I always think it's just easier to... It's hard to say positive, right? It's like, who saw Luke Voit coming?
Well, I mean, if you're looking at one player that is a, you know, you could circle with a big fat marker as a guy that would be surprising, you know, to a certain extent to a lot of people that could make a major contribution, it's Clint Frazier. Like, because there's not very many positions that are, you know, that are up for grabs at this point. And left field seems like it's one of those things because of the talent of Clint Frazier, because of the unknown of his health and what he could do. We all know what he can be and what we think he can be. So I think that could be one of those things. But, you know, I mean, Beck is talking about Luke Voit. I mean, we didn't know that Luke Voit was a person until after he became a Yankee.
August. And then he didn't even do well in August. And he didn't start really performing until late August, early September.
So, I mean, that's a guy that was added to the team with a trade that for a guy like Chasen Shreve, like of all people, that is probably one of the most random trades for a guy to come back and actually be as productive and, you know, and extremely productive. So I think the biggest unknown, if we're comparing it to Luke Voit, we don't know about yet because it may be some random dude or just maybe a trade or maybe.
Or somebody regains form. Like what if Tommy Kahnle comes back?
Okay,
and pitches
I got it.
Okay,
I got it. I know what it is. I know the answer. There's an obvious answer. Jacoby Ellsbury.
No, his plantar fasciitis is too severe.
No, but that's the answer. The biggest surprise positive
would be
Jacoby Ellsbury.
I don't think that would be positive because I think that the Yankees fans would rather just collect the insurance on Jacoby Ellsbury and have him not even go near
the Yankees team. We obviously don't care what the Yankees do with their money. Nobody cares if they collect the insurance or if they pay them. It's like that's not coming out of our pocket.
And some people have accused me for like being the Yankees accountant that I talk so much about the payroll and salaries of these guys.
If Jacoby Ellsbury came back, we had some proof of life in Arizona. He came back and did good things on the field. That would be the biggest surprise, no doubt, hands down. Might be the biggest surprise in baseball history.
Comeback player of the year, Jacoby Ellsbury.
Comeback player of the sport.
Cannot confirm he is alive. He last tweeted on June 28th, 2018.
Damn. Was that when when he made an appearance in Tampa and ruined the clubhouse?
No, he's tweeting about the national champion Oregon State Beavers being the national champs.
Of course he is. His mind is always in the Pacific Northwest. Get your head in the game, Jacoby. Get your head in the game.
You don't like my Tommy Kahnle projection? Maybe Tommy Kahnle comes back from the dead. Apparently, he was pretty fat towards the end of last year. I think we saw someone posted in our chat. He ballooned up to 250 towards the end of the season.
I just don't think it would surprise a ton of people. I think if he came back, it'd be like, okay, well, last year was just an anomaly more towards what he is. So if we're looking for biggest surprises,
but it's hard to find a guy on this roster. Like a lot of these guys, we know what we can expect good things from.
No,
right? Like it's easier to say I'd be more like Gary Sanchez hitting 180 last year was a huge surprise because we all thought he was going to be an all-star.
Okay. So there's two more. I mean, like Greg Bird would be a huge surprise.
I've been calling that for 3 years now. This is not going to be a surprise to me.
At this point, it would be a surprise. You expect it now? Now you expect it.
See, Greg Bird, when you least expect Greg Bird, that's when he comes.
Like spring training.
Did you expect Greg Bird to hit a home run 400 feet off of Andrew Miller, lefty on lefty.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
No, no, you didn't. Did you expect Greg Bird to come up in 2015 and be an offensive force when Mark Teixeira went down? No,
yes,
you didn't.
Because we all expected it because we heard about him for, everybody was raging about
He's
the best hitter in the Yankees organization.
Bullshit. He did not have sweetest the swing. He did not have the prospect status that some other guys did.
I mean, he absolutely had the lore still. They were all in love with this Greg Bird
lore,
swing.
The Greg Bird lore.
The minor league Greg Bird
I believe
lore.
He came up from Trenton. Am I right on that?
I think you're right. But they love his swing. Sweet swing. I mean, they were comparing him to all these greats with left-handed hits. Just easy and effortless.
Right.
He
was a hybrid between Ken Griffey Jr. and Barry Bonds.
Jesus.
From the left.
So, yes, at this point, if Greg Bird came out there and was effective and played on this brittle bird bones, then yeah, that would be a surprise. That
brittle
would be
bird bones.
A very big surprise.
Brittle bird bones, I like that.
Yeah,
is that called an alliteration? Is that what that is?
I don't know. I'm not that smart.
All right. That's going to do it for this episode. Again, check out the episode midweek. I'm looking forward to talking to Dan. Scott, any final words?
We got some full workouts next week, too. So we got some... A lot of grown men throwing the ball to each other.
Like, yeah, the position players are supposed to be reporting, I believe, Sunday or Monday as we're speaking. But they've been there for a long time. Like, a lot of these guys have been there for weeks.
Yeah, I feel like they had a competition under the table. Like, okay, you're going to show up on Monday? No, I'm going to be there on Tuesday the week before.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to be there on Tuesday? I'm going to be there on Sunday the week before.
Like, and it really, in reality, it probably means nothing. But optically, I like it.
I like it. I like the fact that they're eager to get there and they want to beat
hungry?
Each other. At being
hungry
there.
To win.
There's a
all
hunger.
The, all
they're,
the cliches.
They're spending time together.
Atone,
that's a good thing.
Atone for losing to the Red Sox in the playoffs last year. Yeah, it's all great stuff.
Yeah. Spending more time with your guys is a positive. You know? Bond. Get some bonding time in before all the big stuff starts to happen. Get that bonding time in, boys.
All right. We'll talk to you in a couple days.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again guys for your support. Really appreciate it, and go Yankees.